The February 7th, 2018 meeting of the South Kingstown Conservation Commission is now called to order. First item is roll call. Lorraine Jubert.
Here.
Vernon Wyman.
Here.
Jennifer James.
Here.
I have David Flanders, and with us is our staff person, Doug McClain. Absent tonight at this time is Mary Talbot Robiano and Christopher O'Connor and Ann Heffron. I would like to, at this time, add a brief item to the agenda at the end of the meeting, just discussion of potential letter of support for a bill that is being introduced this week to the state legislature for a bag ban. And so it doesn't, we don't have any information, so there's nothing to vote on or anything, but we're just going to get a consensus perhaps or any discussion. Second item is the approval of minutes for November 15th, 2017. Does anyone have any comments on these minutes?
No.
In that case, does anyone want to make a motion to accept?
Motion to accept.
And second? Okay. Any further discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Motion passes. Second is the minutes for last month, January 3rd, 2018. Anybody have any discussion? Any notes? Do I hear a motion? Second.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Motion passes. Next item is the advisory review to the Planning Board of Marina and Shellfish Hatchery Operations Conceptual Master Plan Subdivision Major Land Development Project. Request to develop a two-story, 3,600 square foot shellfish hatchery on the same parcel as an existing marina, plot 87-2, lot 4, 650 Suffolk-Dash Road. Coming up, that's great. We do have a narrative in front of us, but if you want to give us any additional advice.
And before you guys introduce yourselves for the record, I just want to state this one is a bit of an odd fit that it's coming to us. This is categorized as a major land development project.
Because there are two.
Because there are multiple principal uses on the site, and they're really exchanging one of the principal uses for another one. Because of the principal use change issue, the amount of development that's actually occurring is pretty minimal and would not normally trigger this level of review. But because it does trigger that level of review, and it is, customary that the CONCOM weighs in, that's what we're here for. This is an advisory to the Planning Board as part of the major land development project, and the focus for the group is really just on the site planning concerns. So, Perry's gone through a process of permitting with DEM for, what he's doing in terms of exporting to the water. And the use itself is something that actually is not privy to our review. It's really a site planning review. So with that said, would you guys like to introduce yourselves?
I'm Rick St. Jean. I'm a licensed engineer, and I developed the plans for Perry.
Perry Rass, I'm the applicant.
Do you guys want to give a quick overview of what you're doing with the site plan?
Yeah, there's a couple of things that happened. This was the original site. This was the property line here. Perry was able to purchase this piece of the state highway to add to the site. So he increased his land from 0.74 acres to...
Can I see what changed?
Yeah. This was the original property line here.
Yep.
And this is the piece of property that Perry purchased, this little area here, from the state right away.
Okay.
So that enabled him to make a non-conforming use much better, because now he has this area all for parking. Now he can start to meet some of the setbacks, like the front setback and whatnot. This is already gravel. This marina, I went as far back in Regis, the 1962, when I saw these docks here. In the early 70s, it's just like it is. So it predated everything, zoning, CRMC, everything. These buildings were always here. This was an old fish market, Perry can tell you more about that. It isn't anymore. This is an existing cottage that they intend on taking down. This marina building's staying up, and this is a utility shed. It's just a little 180 square foot utility shed. So what we're planning on doing, originally they had this area to work with. What we're planning on doing is we're planning on taking this building down, and the hatchery needs to be near the water. As you can see, there's influent lines and treated effluent lines going out. Perry can tell you all about the operation, but you can see what's happened here is that all of a sudden it has a much bigger land area. We're really only dealing with this area. We're going to access the site through here. We're going to put a couple of rain gardens in because we have to meet current day stormwater regulations. And the building is essentially two stories high. It's Perry will tell you how it's going to be occupied and the seasons that it's going to be. It's going to be a concrete reinforced building because we're in a VE zone. And these types of buildings are allowed in the code because it's, but water-dependent use. It needs to be in close proximity to water to function. It's like a marina building or boat storage. It's like a harbor master shack. It's like a ferry service. All these types of buildings, aquaculture, the code has basically, the building code has basically sectioned out an area to allow these types of buildings to be constructed, either floodproof or breakaway walls. This building is going to be a kind of a combination of both.
Is this a CIF construction?
ICF. Okay. Yep, so exactly right. Concrete floors, obviously there's a lot of water coming in and out of this building. Very minimal, there's a restroom on the top. There's a small area for office space. I'm sure he's going to need some quality assurance in this operation that he's doing.
How does the height compare to the existing building that's going to be taken down?
Right now, not bad. I mean, it's pretty close to where it was. The existing building is one story, but pretty steep roof. I didn't take measurements. I estimate it's 20 feet high.
What's the current septic for the existing building? What are you planning to do?
We actually have more septic now than we need because he has a 600 gallons per day septic system.
On this building?
It's actually, not only this building, but this cottage too.
Oh, okay. So you're just going to pipe to that?
Yeah, so we actually have less use now because now we only need 15 gallons per day because no showers and not 75 per person, right? So we actually have excess capacity. So we're in the septic system is relatively new. So we're in really good shape as far as that goes.
And no floor drains or anything? Or are there floor drains because of the amount of water you use?
No floor drains.
So what happens
that I'm aware of?
Flood?
Like tank flooding. Worked in an aquarium, like what? I mean,
I would imagine you're just going to squeegee it up, right?
Yeah, there is some the tanks in the existing the pilot scale project that I'll have right now will flow. The outflow will be drained, go through a UV filter, and then get drained back into the estuary.
Oh, all
right. The pond. So there is, and that is, CRMC has given me the permit to do that, so that's outlined in that plan. To so would be a floor drain. That floor drain would be the tanks that return, like from draining the tank.
Right. Well, that's different.
Then that would get. Yeah, that would get.
Saying what happens in the event that you overflow a tank, you're just squeegeeing it and dry back.
Drain wet back, then
we would. You know, if it was. It would drain out to the water through UV filtration. But if it flooded on its own, then
you're wet back.
So okay. Do you have chemicals? I need to have a chemical stored that could be wet and flow out?
Well, if the place floods and there's chemicals, like you know, cleaning agents, then that's
right. So
you know, that's a,
those would have to be stored on the second floor in order to make sure that they didn't have an accidental release.
Yeah, well, I mean, just as if you know, my house flooded, you know,
yeah, but this is right on the water, so.
Right.
We could do that. I mean, there's a very limited amount of, I mean, we're talking about cleaning.
The oysters aren't, there's no chemicals involved in this operation, so the oysters are eating phytoplankton algae, which will be growing and feeding to the oysters, and the phytoplankton that will be growing is the same species of phytoplankton that exists naturally in the water, so we're not, we're not treating them chemically or anything like that.
I was just asking about flooding because... Working in an aquarium, we've...
There's no floor drains.
Have flooded. I just double-checked, no floor drains.
Floor drains would be a problem for us only because we're on a septic system.
Yeah.
We can't connect to
right.
So we will have no floor drains. So if there is an accident, like a tank breaks, then, you know,
you're
all hands on deck,
right.
Vacuuming.
You for that.
Yeah,
definitely
exactly.
Done that before.
One, it's seawater, and two, it's pumping back into the sea.
Right.
At that point,
right.
Unless they're obviously...
No, it's not pumping back in unless it's treated. So if
right.
it
That's
overflows
right.
within the building,
yeah.
it's, they just have to manually clean it up. It's
yes.
not going to be
yes.
just free release.
Hopefully that never happens. But
yeah.
if it does,
sorry,
I'll
just
be
asking.
I'm speaking out of side of our purview, which is just simply site planning. I just wanted to... Are the windows openable for ventilation, or what are your ventilation plans for this building?
I really only am certain that the second floor, south facing, is got to have a lot of windows, and it would probably get too hot for them, so there'll have to be some sort of ability to either open them or have some kind of ventilation. I would imagine that you'd be able to open them. Or they, I don't have that. The windows I have now, you just open, you know. When I
are you at the stage for meeting with the planning board where you have to? Are they going to want to know at this stage where you're at with the planning board?
Not yet.
Okay.
Next step.
Okay.
Yeah.
I asked why you're curious.
We're coming back. When is it? February, I think, right?
Yeah.
You guys are on the February agenda, I believe.
Yeah.
The late February agenda.
I think it's the 27th, if I remember right.
Yep.
Right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the key to this building, it's very functional. It's a hatchery. So he's growing algae up at the top, so he needs as much light as he possibly can get. There was concerns at the last meeting we had with the TRC that, you know, we may have to close them so we don't disturb the neighbors because the lights may be on during the night. And then the oyster growing is going to be on the first floor, ground level floor. So, I mean, I'm sure we're going to need some ventilation because during the summertime it's going to get hot in there.
Yeah, well, the garage door would, you know, be able to be open, or, you know, whatever
yeah.
other
yeah.
doors, vents, windows.
And the building's kind of conceptual. As you're looking at it now, he intended to match the way the oyster bar looks now.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of keep the area the same. Then maybe skylights if we need more lights. This, you know, the south facing maybe all glass. So I mean it's kind of, we're working our way through the process at this point, and I don't think Perry or neither have I have really, you know, sat down with the details of how big the bathroom's going to be, how big these tanks are going to be, how we're going to hang them.
Okay.
We're probably going to need some kind of monorail because, you know, some of this stuff is heavy.
I just want to know where we were in the process for defining these things. Okay.
One of the other site planning issues is you mentioned four spaces primarily for employees.
Yes.
But what about delivery trucks, picking up things and dropping things off?
So the the nature of this business, it's not like...
Oh, you go by water? Is that it?
No.
This is going to be interesting because I found this interesting when he said it last time.
What did they say last time?
About how big a million of these things are.
Oh, so it's not like trucks are going to be shipping, picking up and shipping from this building. What we hope to produce is, if we're good at it, 40 million oyster seed as
so
well as some
tiny,
amount
right?
of... So 1 million oyster seed fits in about the volume like this.
Right.
So we'll ship out, you know, a big order. say 3 million oyster seed to a grower. He'll, you know, pick them up in his truck probably early in the morning and put them in the water that afternoon. And, you know, so we're dealing with, you know, the end product is, you know, fits in a yeah. box with a couple ice packs.
Yeah.
So it's not like delivery trucks coming and going.
Right.
You know, we'll initially have to get some tanks delivered, but that won't be an ongoing, you know, thing that happens throughout the summer.
Okay. Makes sense. Thank you. The other issue was with the stormwater management. The rain gardens, how much flow is that designed to handle, or what area is it treating? Is it just the roof?
The roof.
Just the roof?
Yep.
So that surrounding area must be pretty compacted, right? The current
It is. It appears that all this is fill. Before we even build the building, we're going to need to do borings because we're probably on peat, I would think, and this is a concrete building, so it weighs a lot. I don't know what exactly the nature of the materials are. It does drain because there's a lawn there now. There's no puddles on it. I mean, you know.
But there's existing lawn there? It's hard to tell.
Yeah, there is. Yeah, it's kind of a scrubby kind of lawn. Obviously, they had some circulation. They put a sand filter in here. So, they, you know, obviously, it does drain.
That's
how much it drains.
It's a raised BSF.
It's a raised BSF,
yeah. So
yes.
So you probably have less than 2 feet. You definitely have
probably
less than 2 feet.
Inches,
yeah, I'm assuming,
inches.
Absolutely, yeah. That,
so
that's what it is.
For the rain garden, you're going to check the depth to water
yes,
table
we
there
are. Yep.
Two times a day?
Two times a day?
Well, the tide is probably
oh, high. Yeah, there you go, yeah. I believe we have water table. I mean, we must from the
elevation is about 8.5 feet, I believe. That's what you're asking, right?
Yeah. Well, the two issues with the rain garden are compaction and water table.
Yeah, because you need to infiltrate the water once it's in there.
Yeah, there's an elevation that was taken. I don't know where if it's on this or not.
But yes, all that design has to be done. I mean, obviously Perry's just trying to make sure that this is a plausible.
Yeah. Well, it's just that if the rain gardens aren't suitable at all,
how are you going to handle the
runoff? How are you going to handle the runoff? It's right on the water.
Yeah. Well, definitely not only you. We have to deal with CRMC the same issue.
Right.
You know.
Well,
so Dave Reese is going to dig in.
Put a green roof on. That would help reduce it.
Yeah.
And it would be attractive from the restaurant.
I have a rain garden on my restaurant, and people think that there are weeds growing in my gutter,
oh my
and it drives
goodness.
Me crazy.
You
like, Scott, you gotta take care of those weeds. I'm like,
you need a
rain
garden out there.
Yeah.
That's like the Save the Bay building.
Yeah,
well, that would be the way to go. That's a good idea.
That's a good educational.
Glad to hear you doing that.
Yeah, we do. We have little plants, and we have paintings of each little native plant, and it says what it does, but no one notices. I mean, people only think that it's weeds.
Gotta go with something low and spreading.
I thought it was
even
so cool.
Yeah.
Well,
I'm glad you're open to that because that may be the solution here.
Yeah.
That's
you have
great.
To reduce some of it.
The other issue is while you're constructing, where are you going to put erosion controls so you can limit disturbance? Because it looks like a really tight spot.
Yeah, we're going to have to put them right at the top of that. Man-made shoreline that was stone wrecking. We're going to have to just ring that whole area and make sure we're on top of it all the time.
Okay, it looks really tight.
It is tight, yeah. The existing building right now overhangs that.
I saw that.
See this deck here?
The smaller plan looked like it was overhanging, but
it does.
The larger one.
Yeah. So
the deck
does, yeah.
The water.
So once we take that all out, we're going to have to, you know, probably put hay bales up because we may not be able to get silt fence in there. Oh, they're not here.
So you'll work with someone, an engineer or a landscape architect?
Yeah, probably. The burritos, those must be allowed, right?
Yeah. Compost filters.
Yeah, and we'll use those.
Burritos.
Yeah. We call them burritos in the coastal business.
Not the little straw ones.
No, the tubes.
The big compost.
Coconut fiber, whatever.
Yep.
But you need
good.
Someone who's qualified to develop that plan,
right.
Like a landscape architect or engineer.
Yep.
Okay.
And that edge has indications of remaining very stable, presumably.
Oh, yeah, that's been there for a long time.
Yeah.
Yep. There's tanks stored on it now.
There's, last year we got permits to do a restoration, shellfish restoration project there. So there's 6-foot by 12-foot tanks that we pump seawater into, and then it drains. We aerate the water. We add oyster larvae. The oyster larvae that we buy, you know, in the future hopefully will produce the oyster larvae. But the oyster larvae lands on the crushed up shell, and then we return the shell into the pond for oyster restoration to realize the benefits of the filtration of the oysters and the habitat that it creates. And that's a project that we do with Nature Conservancy right now. So we do have tanks out there currently outside.
Just to cover all bases, and it may sound, like over the top, have you looked at or calculated what 10, 20 years down the road, water level rise, how it's going to affect what we're doing here? And if you need to elevate any of this that we're talking about?
We're in good shape as far as that goes, because he needs a lot of headroom. And it's a concrete building designed to take the flood. And the flood elevation, we have a lot of freeboards. BFE is 15. Our second floor is, it doesn't really say here. It's probably about 4 feet above that. So unless we get more than 4 feet, you know. And that's, even if we've got 4 feet, it still wouldn't reach the top of the grass, so we still wouldn't be there.
Okay.
But you looked at the projections.
Yeah.
Anybody have any more questions, concerns?
No.
Doug, we have to make a recommendation to the planning board.
Yep.
What would it look like? Are we approving?
Basically, what the CONCOM's role in this is to provide advisory comments to the planning board. The CONCOM, basically, you've seen the planning board when they elicit comments. They get them from a number of different agencies. Some of it's town staff, some of it's, infrastructure or town services. So what we're doing is we're essentially providing comments in the same way. Our comments could be, we've reviewed the plans. It could be no comment if there's no, perspective on it. It could be we encourage or we, find this to be, acceptable or, see positive signs. It could be a comment of, we have concerns and list those out. You are not required to give a thumbs up, thumbs down.
Right, I understand. But would we be seeing these again at the get-go? Because early stage.
No, this would be, all of the CONCOM stuff. I think that the planning board is counting on seeing this in late February, and then that way we're not holding up any decision-making that could occur at the late February meeting. So I'm sorry, I misunderstood. You were wondering if...
No, I was just wondering, two things. Are we going to see this again? And what I know about doing our concerns, but here we seem to be working simpatico with the applicant.
Yep.
And so then...
Yeah, I mean, it could be that, the comment could be that, we've reviewed the plan and we accept it as presented by the applicant, or it could be,
based on the knowledge that we have at this point.
Yeah, exactly. Or it could be, items that you maybe, want to articulate in there. It could be any number of that. Essentially, there's no requirement of responding, and there's no requirement that the response has to be with an affirmative or negative type of,
Hey, Per, you put in any filtration system coming out of it before you discharge the effluent?
The filtration system that comes out of it will be in accordance with the RIPDES permit, which I'll have to get. So whether that's disc filter or sock filter, definitely UV filter as well.
But you wouldn't be putting it through like a sand filter or anything like that, leaving?
Sand filter is a possibility to use as we pump the water in. It's either sand filter or disc filter that we're going to use. Some people think a sand filter is going to get the water too clean, and then the organisms aren't going to be hardy enough to deal with reality. But as far as the filtration, effluent filtration, that is It's going to be in accordance with the RIPTES permit, and I know that right now they're requiring me to have a UV filter system with the pilot scale project I'm doing, but it doesn't meet the criteria to have a full scale RIPTES permit, which would then require me to have additional filtration. Right. So whether that's disc filters or sock filters, yeah. fiber filters, or you know, sand filter. I don't think it's sand filter.
Yeah, no, so the amount of mechanical filtering, not any kind of
as well as UV.
UV following, because it won't work. It tends to not work well with a lot of TSS.
I'm gonna adhere to whatever the RIPTES permit is gonna require me to have. I mean, because there's a number of different filters out there, and I've visited a number of different hatcheries that treat this in different ways. The idea or the concept of the hatchery is the shellfish are coming in. The only input that's going into the shellfish, the water's being brought into the marina to the building and would be filtered. And then the only thing that would be added to the water is naturally occurring algae or the same species The shellfish are then filtering the water, eating that naturally occurring phytoplankton, or the naturally occurring species that are added and grown and added to the water, and then the water would be put back into after some kind of filtration. So there's no kind of chemical addition. So I don't know how stringent those the RIPTES permit is going to be as far as what kind of filtration they're going to require. So I don't know that. I mean, there's not going to be more nitrogen going out than there was coming in.
There's something to test all the effluents. Yeah. It'll be a point source discharge.
Yeah. Okay, sounds good.
So we're here to just make our recommendation to the planning board. Do you want to make a motion?
I'll make a motion. After much discussion, there are no real concerns with the application. The only issues that we recognize is that we'd like to ensure that the rain garden site is investigated. The two rain garden sites are investigated to ensure they're not compacted, and if they are, to make sure that they're restored so that they're suitable for use as rain gardens, and to determine the water table elevations there at low and high tide to ensure that infiltration can occur. If 1 inch of runoff from the roof cannot be infiltrated there, then other options should be investigated, such as green roof. Secondly, this requires a soil erosion sediment control plan with clearly defined limits of disturbance and perimeter sediment controls using the current standards of the soil erosion sediment control handbook.
I would add to that cleaning chemicals and that kind of thing be stored on the second story.
Agreed.
Do I hear a second?
Second.
Any further discussion on the motion? All right. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Thanks.
Okay. Thank you, guys.
Yep.
Appreciate it.
You're welcome.
I want a tour.
Yeah.
Definitely.
It will be cool.
Yeah, very interesting.
Yeah.
Now that you're saying that, I'm thinking maybe you can like grow herbs.
Like different plants up there.
Well, how about we do a Concom tour?
Yeah, that's right. It's like birds, oysters.
Yeah.
Don't give me any ideas.
I'm
sorry, Barry. Have a good one.
Yeah, our first foray into natural vegetation around a building was the Boss Arena on the Kingston campus.
Mm-hmm.
And when Brad Boss came and saw the weeds growing up in front of the building, he was outraged. Mm-hmm. You got to take those things down. We explained what we were doing. We explained the logic. But we shook our heads. He says, but I don't like it. I said, okay, you donated the money. We're taking it down for now. We'll try this somewhere else.
No, it's funny.
Our next order of business is a discussion of proposed community outreach process regarding plastic shopping bags as outlined by our staff person, Doug McClain.
tied into the memo with the previous marina.
Yeah.
I'll start it off by, I liked Doug's four bullet points as far as trying to establish a division of labor. My personal impression was that the first two bullet points probably need to be addressed before the second two, and that they can be done concurrently. I'll also add that one day, two, 3 weeks ago, when I was in Belmont, I got buttonholed by the vice chair of the EDC, who...
Henry Fair?
I didn't get his name.
Big guy?
Yeah, big guy.
Yep.
And he wanted to talk about actually some tree issues, but then I mentioned what we're going to be doing, and he suggested that we have a joint meeting. And are you also chair for sustainability?
Not chair, but yeah, I'm a liaison.
I understand. I think that it would be a really good idea as far as going through the first bullet point for us to have a joint meeting, the three different committees.
I think we could look at that.
And clearly, we're not all going to be able to attend if we have at least two or three people from each one. We can, you know, bring something back to our next meeting.
Yeah. Let me think about that, and it makes sense for the three groups being us, EDC, Economic Development Committee, and the Sustainability Committee, for this to be on each of our radars and for us to share resources, and I don't, you know, those two groups, you know, they obviously, they have their meetings set, some of them even have additional meetings on top of their monthly meetings, like a subcommittee by EDC, so they may not be chomping at the bit for an extra meeting, and neither would you guys necessarily be like, oh, let's go to their meeting,
but like,
yeah, and I think Henry's one of those guys that he's like, I'm ready for more meetings, but the group as a whole, it might end up being, I think you're right, that... it would be valuable for the three to coordinate, and it might be so that we have representatives.
School, you know,
yeah, like maybe we have like we designate some representatives from each group.
Yeah.
Ideally, the CONCOM is the lead. So okay. Ideally, what I could do is see if one of them would be willing to send a representative or two, or as many as people want to come to a CONCOM meeting where we're discussing it. As opposed to trying to get an extra meeting on the docket that we don't already have. So it could be asking them to, you know, designate people that could come to the March CONCOM meeting and start to talk about, open a dialogue about what resources we could have. I think that before there's a meeting, work could be done to really first understand what role each group could have. And just so you're aware, in the vein of that, I'm going to put something on each of those two groups' next agenda. Sustainability Committee is actually meeting next week on Tuesday, and they have an agenda item that states basically, you know, discuss potential collaboration or partnerships with the Conservation Commission regarding plastic bags. So I think that was the first thing is get this on their radar, give them background, and then maybe understand, like, oh, some of them might be like, I know exactly, you know, what I could do to help. I have a great contact, you know, this is how I can help with some communication or connect you with some resources.
Now, in the meantime, I mean, before those meetings, I don't mind the EDC meets, but we still could contact the Rhode Island Chamber of Commerce Village, Wakefield Village,
yeah.
Peacedale Village. I mean, that's easy to do.
And
that would be bring some more... The more information we could bring to subsequent meetings, I think, the better.
I think that the EDC doesn't meet until March 1st. They're the first Thursday of the month. So they'll meet before our next meeting, but really catching us just before we would have time to, like, be developing our own packet.
Right.
The EDC has great contacts at the chamber. They have contacts at Wakefield Village Association and Peacedale Neighborhood Revitalization. I'm not saying that it has to be this way, but if we want to broach this subject with the business community, it may be seen as, you know, if the EDC is already on board with what the CONCOM's role is, or what the towns.
Are?
I think that the biggest thing the EDC is going to say is, you know, before we jump into writing an ordinance, we really need to understand what, you know, the pulse of the community is, and particularly understand the pulse of the businesses. And if there's a lot of concerns, or, you know, we need to, you know, think about that and maybe think about how we could adjust to that or accommodate that.
So they could be very helpful to us.
I think they could. So I think bringing them in first or okay. using them as the group that contacts the chamber,
sure.
Wakefield Village, Peacedale, could actually be... You know, like they're getting news from a person that they know, they yeah. trust, and they know is already looking for the business person's perspective. So, like, while we develop, you know, what our process is, what businesses we want to see, they could be a little bit of a lead communication person for that.
Now, so they're meeting before our next meeting.
They are meeting before our next meeting.
Would it be beneficial for one of us to go there and explain our point of view instead of just... Oh, how does this affect the business community? And it's instead, it's saying, what's the initiative? What's the whole purpose of doing this?
That could be helpful.
Okay, I'd be willing to do that.
Sure. Yeah, that could be helpful. I mean, I think I'm also, if you're not able or it's like too many meetings, I can describe it because I'll be as up to speed as everyone here. But coming as a CONCOM member... saying this is an issue that's important to us. I just wanted to be able to, like, hear, you know, give you our perspective on it, but then hear your perspective directly. They probably, you know, would appreciate that.
Lorraine, want to come with?
March 1st at 7 o'clock. The EDC is the first Thursday of the month.
March 1st, I believe, is Thursday.
Yeah.
Wouldn't we have to have, like, a... talking points for them and a handout ready for them in advance?
Well, we can get them from the Barrington ordinance.
Yeah. So we have a bunch of stuff collected. I feel like we need to bring something.
I don't think we need to create anything else.
I think that what they'd want to hear is that we're early in the process and they're being brought in early in the process. I think they'd, you know, it's nice for them to have maybe a little something on paper to react to, but I could help with that. And basically they get memos, like you guys get memos, that prep them for specific items. It doesn't have to be a long prep, but I could say that the CONCOM's intentions is to basically, as a first step, gauge the temperature of the community on this, and is particularly interested in gauging the temperature from business owners. We have a plan to, you know, talk to business owners at large, medium, small scale, and to also talk to business stakeholder organizations, and we would appreciate the EDC's feedback and potential network and connections, and you know, how do we go about that? They probably, that's all the info I think they'd need to see. I think that...
Also, by that time, we could give them detailed information on the proposed or the introduced statewide bill by Carol McAtee. Being done this week.
Yeah.
And that would have, you know, her outline, and preferably would come with a preamble saying the need for it, all of that.
Yeah, they would probably be interested. And I mean, they probably would, you know, I think there could be some information given to them about, you know, here's the environmental benefits of considering a ban. That group is very diverse. That generally, I think the perspective of that group is we think about business concerns first, but we're not blind to the fact that there's benefits of this on a broader scale.
Particularly with a town like South Kingstown.
Yeah. And so I think that they'll recognize that. I think that group is, it's not all like business owners that are, you know, you've got a lot of people that think of economic development broadly, that think about, you know, hey, you know, we need to protect our community values.
Yep.
And so I think that will resonate with some of them, but the thing that will resonate with all of them and where they'll see their specific traction or what they really could help with is that introduction to the stakeholder organizations, and then maybe giving us some guidance on, like, hey, you know what, if you want a range of large, small, and medium scale businesses, that would be good to get their, you know, perspectives. I've got a few, and I could introduce, you know, the businesses to this idea. This is the sort of thing where I feel like, you know, we're generally kind of keep our process, aside from inter-town communications, fairly quiet. You know, I've had a reporter ask me about it, and I said, we're not ready for that. And this is the sort of thing, like, you don't want this to become, you know, oh, God, what's the town doing? And I think the best way to do it is to work with known connections as much as we can.
I agree with that. I just don't want to go down this rabbit hole where we get channeled into the focus of our perspective and what we're trying to do here is, oh, are we going to, you know, is it going to be bad for business? Because the perception, even if we promote that you could, even Shaw's, by the way, for a dollar, they're hanging all over the place, has Shaw's logo and a scenic picture back. I mean, this is how businesses can make it work for them. But if it gets presented in a different way, well, who's offended here? Who's offended here? It's going to be put out. We could be going down a focused rabbit hole that takes us away from why we should be doing it.
Yeah, I think that that's a good point. I think we should be centered. I think that the we knew that
and
if...
be on the defensive.
Yeah.
But you can have your logo on your bed.
Yeah, yeah. You know? I think that, you know, so that should be thought through in the messaging that goes out to folks. And I think that obviously we're reaching out to businesses because they are the organizations that may have the biggest, that it would impact them the most.
I think the consumer is going to be impacted the most.
Yeah, I mean, consumers will have to change their behavior, but I think that that will address. I think that businesses would argue they're impacted the most because they're, you know, they may stand, like it might be a monetary thing for them. Like, oh, to move away from that and to offer a different type of bag, actually those bags are more expensive and now I have to consider whether I charge my customers for those bags and now I'm put on the spot of, is that really the right choice? And so for them, it's like, okay, that's my business, my livelihood. Any small change to that is a big deal to them. I think the reason why we're going to the businesses is because we anticipate that that's the group where there might be the biggest, you know, pushback. And what we're trying to do is, you know, yeah, you're right. It's like kind of going in like, we know you might not love this, but so it is like opening the conversation in a way where we feel comfortable and stable with what is being proposed and that there's valid reasons to do it, but trying to also ask questions that get to give them an opportunity to share concerns in a way that they understand we're taking it in. We're going to, you know, take it in as our feedback for our process because we do want to get in front of that question that will inevitably drive the conversation at the council level and generally the community level.
And I you know. Think that we can give assurances to them that these other towns and, like, how many in Massachusetts now? 40?
I don't know.
At least. I mean, they're all making these adjustments for yeah. the ecological good.
Yeah, and I think that there's a lot it's that we can said. So the broad, I think we need to think about messaging quite a bit.
Yep.
And so that's one of our tasks in the next month. I think bringing the EDC and the sustainability committee in is a good idea. I don't think we have to have like a written down, here's our message yet, but I think it could be helpful for them to understand why we're looking to do it. It could be helpful for them to see the other communities that have done it so that they understand that, you know, this is a growing trend and there's other communities with just as much, if not more, of a commercial base than we have.
And that's why I wanted to introduce the idea of the state building.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And we can see where that goes.
No, I've been doing a little bit of my own research because I'm not in an area I'm terribly familiar with, but I've been surprised that many of the ordinances or whatever that have been put in place lately focused on the alternate bag or bags and even setting prices for those for the consumer if they don't have any bag and they need one.
Yeah.
That they have, in some cases, and they've even put a price sort of ceiling on those consistently. So it's a... It doesn't end up being unfair, or it kind of takes away the argument that financially the burden is all going to be on the store itself. So I don't know. I was surprised to see that because it has the effect of having the behavioral change element to it, but without necessarily, you know, I don't know about the price of plastic bags, but
yeah.
I mean, it puts some ability for them to recover that expense, and it's a disincentive for behavioral change purposes.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. So basically yeah. you're saying like there's a different quality alternative bag
right.
that is allowed, and so that, you know, but, you know, in order to avoid price gouging yeah. by organizations, you know, there'd be a cap on that. And
right.
they'd probably understand that, and they'd then probably, all of them would want to say, you know, I need to understand how I won't lose money
right.
by the alternative, the cost of the alternative bags,
right.
the options you're allowing me, and the charge that I'm allowed to make, the cap I'm allowed to make. So it's like, you know, and by the end of the day, it's like at the end of the year, what are we talking about? Like, is your bag budget
right.
going to be... over by $20, under by $20. Yeah. But those are the kind of things that they'll need. We'll need to kind of, I think, get into. Mm-hmm. Will be, you know, how do we demonstrate that this won't be a financial hardship?
Right.
And that's the question that I think when we get to the council level, if we're able to say, we really engaged the business community and we were able to address some of the concerns, and I think our ordinance can address it in a way that does not provide a financial hardship to the businesses and that the business community can accept. I think that is actually, at the end of the day, what's going to make this a workable ordinance. If we don't have that,
yeah,
it's basically going to be this nebulous. I just think that there's too many concerns for us to go down that path.
Now, what entity in the town is going to eventually write the ordinance? Town legal council? And
yeah.
Approved by town council?
I think we develop the concepts that would go into the ordinance, but I mean, we're not writing anything from scratch. There's enough of these out there, and I mean, you know, you probably, just from what you just described, Vern, have probably a better handle on it than the average person of like, oh, you know, like this is some of the range of options that are set up.
Right.
And so probably it's on us to research what's out there and to be maybe prepared to be able to address those things in our initial, you know, conversations with folks, so that we go in knowing, you know, bag bans aren't just, you know, there's one size fits all. There's a range of things that are done to protect and ensure that businesses have options.
I think that's where, like, bullet number two, using, like, Clean Ocean Access has helped Jamestown, is helping a bunch of places develop it and get it through. They'll be valuable.
Yeah.
My office, Nate, is the president of the board.
Of Clean Ocean Access, right?
Do you want to take that? And someone could take Save the Bay and give them a call. And local conservation districts.
That's not correct.
No.
Unless do they mean conservation commissions?
Yeah, that's, I think totally they different. Do. Otherwise, it's going to be the South County,
Southern Rhode Island Conservation District.
So maybe that was meant towards like the Narragansett ConCom.
Yeah, it could be.
Talk with them. I know someone.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because that's what I think we had talked about last time was Narragansett.
So
that's Narragansett ConCom.
Yeah.
I'll work with the Ocean Access.
Okay.
I wouldn't mind reaching out to Save the Bay.
Okay.
See, we're making progress.
I think also if when there's a discussion with the Economic Development Committee, the main thing that we want them to do is also help us design the outreach strategies, like identify the businesses and the contacts.
Oh, definitely. I agree, because we're just sort of talking off the top of it. Who offers these bags in the first place and all that? That would be very helpful.
Well, and I think that the EDC is seen in the town as an entity that certainly does advocate for businesses. And especially in the end, like, who are we trying to sell this to? We're trying to sell it to the town council. The town council has a relationship with the EDC. They know the members, and they know that group, when they're pulled into a topic, will advocate for the business perspective. So if we're successful, I mean, it's unclear, because this is going to be a little uncharted waters for these two groups. But if we're successful in developing an outreach strategy that the EDC is like fully behind, or really comes from them, you know, maybe this is the sort of thing where we plant a seed that we think that this might be the best way to go, and they say, yeah, absolutely, I like this idea of small, medium business. Can we help you identify the businesses? Let them run with, like, this outreach plan was actually more developed in detail by the EDC. That probably comes across as like, wow, that you really then allowed, the business perspective was really accounted for, because, the way that they would have gone about it would have made sure that there were no concerns that were not.
That's good.
Unturned.
But I also want to make sure that we're not going to be hypersensitive to any pushback. Because, like I said last month, there is going to be pushback.
Yeah, there will be.
And how much? It's going to be, period. And, in fact, when we were talking about a survey, you know, I was saying that even our sources for the survey are going to be questioned. Well, you only surveyed 30%. Well, there's going to be pushback. And I think that we have to establish the ConCom's principles for the impetus for doing this at the top. You know, this is what's important. So let's then see what the fallout is.
So I think that the ConCom's position on this, honestly, as much as we know, and that we're taking it up because we see there being an environmental benefit, that we're most successful if our position remains somewhat neutral, and that our position is to determine what's the best fit for the community. And if we go into the process saying what we really want to do is determine what the best fit for the community is in terms of the ordinance and the type of ordinance that could be considered here, and I think we probably need to educate ourselves on the range of options that Vern was discussing. So we go in saying, hey, you know, the ordinance can actually be quite business friendly, and go in with good knowledge and a comfort level of speaking to those items. I think that our principles are that obviously there's strong environmental outcomes, and if we can demonstrate that there is a fit in the community, which I think that, you know, there's a way to do that, the outcome will be most successful. But it'd be very difficult if we take an advocacy position that we really do want to see a ban in place by such a date.
No, I'm not talking about that. I just mean the principles of what are the benefits of you know, banning this one little tiny thing. It's not banning all of the bags in the store that get wrecked. And, I mean, I went and bought one of these plastic containers of, like, seafood salad. And that lid, you have to work to make it. The guy arbitrarily put it into plastic bag and said, here you go. I said, no. It was, so there's a million garbage bags. Yeah. And we put plastic bags, the tall kitchen bags, we put them in the big black bags before we take them to the dump with a stick. We're not doing nothing here.
Yeah.
We're doing 1%.
I think that... The key is to sell the EDC however we can, right? Is to get them on our side, sell to them.
That it's a good idea.
That it's a good idea, tell them the benefits, and, you know, help them usher it through because we need them to buy
that'd be very helpful.
So,
and I think I knowing the temperament of the EDC, I agree. You don't tiptoe around the fact that, like, yeah, the reason why we're looking at this is for environmental benefits.
Right.
And I think that we say, that for the EDC and for anybody, the general average person, that, you know, we're looking to protect community values, and we're a community that, you know, we have a lot of, you know, precious water resources. And, you know, we are a community that, like, really... tries to protect its, you know, its ecological assets, and they'll get that, and so it's really where the rubber meets the road. I think that, you know, going in saying, of course, that there would be, you know, benefits to this. I think we could talk about the fact that it's, you know, that I think we should do a little research on this as well. That plastic bags are very difficult to recycle. That there's a little bit of a myth of, like, yeah.
Oh, yeah, you just recycle.
Yeah, you just recycle plastic bags. It's just like, you know, just like anything else. Like, no, they're actually very difficult to recycle, so that it really does become, and that specific item is a little bit of, like, an odd fit that they're generally not handled well. What happens to them when you don't see them anymore? It's probably, most people wouldn't think any more about it, but it's not as positive as you think.
I also think that a positive point to make to the EDC is that two things, that we're becoming, in the oddest ways possible, a more and more green country. I mean, in some ways not at all, but for instance, whole shift to sustainable power. But a clean community that does not have this kind of litter on the beaches, I think, and if they get behind this thing, I think it's tremendously good for business.
Yeah.
Because this is a tourist town. And if they, you know, come down here, and if these businesses line up and say, hey, we want to support, you know, this clean, green South Kingstown, I think that's tremendously good.
Yeah.
Not just having a logo on a bag.
So my thought is to sell it to the EDC, you bring up those points. I think, you know, the average person probably needs to hear, this is like part of our talking point, of has ecological benefits. This, you know, we're a community that wants to join that. There's a part of our economy that's based on the enjoyment of our natural resources, just like some of these other communities that have passed them, like Newport, like Middletown, like Portsmouth, like Block Island, like Jamestown. They're all communities that, like, you know, basically, oh, we need to protect our ecological resources because people come here for that. So they'll probably, oh, it's starting to hit, like, the average, like, you know, like the average person that has only a passive interest in environmental is starting to see the connections back to community good, you know, the good of the community. I think we talk about the that plastic bags are not easily recyclable. The average person is suddenly like, oh, I didn't really think about that, but that's right, I can't put those in my recycling. So what happens to them? Like,
Well, they say, oh, they got the blue box, and you say that blue box is not.
Or they take them back to the supermarket and put them in recycling bags here, it says.
Well, that's what I'm saying, that blue box back.
But the average person probably just throws them away. You know, the average person
even,
that's like...
Even the supermarkets throw them away.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah, yeah.
So I think maybe
we don't want to make that bold assumption because we actually don't know that for a fact.
I know it's true in Belmont.
Well, you say, the statement that they are not easily recycled. You cannot see them in a recycle bin. There is not a market for recycling.
Yeah. They're not easily recycled. So that's the point. I know Chris said we should back away from just saying like, oh, well, you know, the grocery stores just end up throwing them away because that's like, you know, we don't. Yeah.
Well, no, I mean, you would have to find out for sure.
Yeah, and and our main point is just to touch on the fact that most people would resonate with them. Like, these are not easily recycled items. Right. Then you get to, but the real goal of our immediate effort is to determine if this is a fit in South Kingstown.
Yes.
And that for it to be a fit, there's a range of options for this ordinance, and they can be arranged differently to address and accommodate certain business issues, such as how would consumers who, you know, wouldn't have brought their own bag, how can you accommodate them in a reasonable way? We'd like to understand those issues, and we'd like to understand them specifically by talking one-on-one with the business community. The EDC is going to say, I love it. I love the idea. I love what you're doing. Definitely need to make sure that we understand the business concerns as part of this. But they'll get, like that, I think will get them generally on board. And I think Lorraine's point was, let's have the EDC provide a more defined outreach process. Who from the EDC would like to reach out to the council?
Who should go? You know who should go with you? It's Chris. He's a lawyer. They're going to respect his opinion. He's not a green and crazy environmentalist.
Neither am I, dear.
But if I go with you, they may see there have been 2 weirdos.
Wow, Danny. Crazy environmentalist and a weirdo.
So
I wear them well.
That's my suggestion. I think
Chris will dress up in a suit.
What are thoughts on the sustainability committee? Who I think we probably would know are...
I don't really know what their charge is.
Yeah, I don't know.
They're new, so they're figuring it out. They actually, you guys may have known that they did like a community sustainability forum. David, I think you might have attended.
Yeah.
What are they trying to sustain?
They're trying to... So sustainability is like the word that like could be anything. Like anything could be made to be more sustainable.
Yeah.
Their focus is on energy. So like municipal energy, energy programs, how do you get, you know, more renewable energy throughout the community? Their focus is on waste. So they're interested in solid waste and, you know, how do you have a more, you know, like reduce, you know, like, yeah, basically have you know, have...
I wrote here that I had the idea that what we should be doing is petitioning the town council to... change over literally every light bulb in every school, every town building to LED. And then from there, go to our street lights and our sports.
That's a great
And so Doug says, that's fabulous. Sustainability is how we're working on it.
The economic development committee might like that too because it should save the town some money.
So the sustainability committee is interested in this topic, and I brought it up because the forum, that came out as like, oh, we should actually work on that issue. And I told my sustainability committee, I don't think you guys need to lead this. My CONCOM will, but you could have a role. I think that their role would basically be a little bit of the rah-rah, what's the good reasons why we're doing it. I don't think we need the rah-rah yet. I think we need to ask them. I think we need to get them involved. We need to let them know we're working on it, and we need to establish a partnership or an understanding that, you know, what they could do. What they really could do and what they're seeing their role is a lot of community engagement. So there's a lot of sustainability of, like, they see it as, like, how do we bring this message to the people so that the average homeowner has good resources to be more sustainable on their own?
Yeah.
We're not ready for that kind of public outreach because we're really want to do this in a little bit more of a quieter way before there's this kind of like, wait a minute, what's the town? You know, like, we kind of actually don't want to engage with a group that's really looking to help spread the word of, like, the positive things that could come out of this. That might be more at the council level. I don't know.
Saving money is the only thing we need to address.
Yeah, I don't.
Get the EDC on board, and the EDC will sell it 100%.
And I think we should, you know, like, there's no, like, we need to, like, make sure that the sustainability committee knows what we're doing. I'm open. I think it maybe takes a little thought of, they have a role, their role probably isn't until later, but I think that we don't want to surprise them with something. So I can give them an update at their meeting next week. And I'll say that I think that this is something that we envision the Sustainability Committee having a role in assisting with community education and outreach. And they could be the kind of people that, like, could help bring in, you know, the rah-rah when, if this comes to, like, a public hearing and we're not sure what the crowd in the you know, the room might be, you know, they'll help to basically make sure the crowd in the room is fairly supportive.
We can make South Kingston Conservation Commission bags and we have them give them away.
No, we already talked about those bags.
I was at a town council meeting one time and there was a high school teacher, I think his last name, it wasn't Green, but he was a high school teacher who was very progressive and very cool, and he was talking about an issue that wasn't going to come up for another hour. He's just sitting there. He's writing stuff down, and so by the time he came up for citizen comments, and Stephen Alford is right here, and the town council's up there, he said, you know, I was looking at all these lamps, I was counting them, and they're 100-watt lamps, and if we were to convert to, at that time, the mini fluorescents, he says, you took the, and he knew the price of kilowatt hours, he said, you would have saved X number of dollars this particular meeting, and sure enough, 2-3 months later, they've been converted. I mean, that's the financial argument.
We have
I don't think we need a
door and then indoor.
I'll handle sustainability committee in terms of, I'll put a little bit more thought into, just so we don't just say, hey, you guys have a role, we'll talk to you in 5 months. But I'll think about what how to introduce this topic to them at their meeting. I don't think we need a you guys don't need to attend that one.
Okay.
I think that the EDC would be a good one, and I actually agree with Lorraine. I think David and Chris, because Chris has good background on this, would be the good tag team to come, and I'll guilt Chris in because he didn't make this one, and he felt bad, and he said, oh, if you're tight on a quorum, and I said, don't worry about it, Chris, but now I'll tell him, like, oh, we really needed you, and now you have an extra meeting in March.
Also, give him a heads up soon, because it's March 1st, and that'll, if he has something, he could plan around it.
Yeah. No, I'll let him know. I like that progressive, let's get this. This is what happens when you don't come to a meeting.
Yes.
One fact that I came across in my research that I want to validate, but it basically said that a plastic bag, a one-time use plastic bag, will outlive the entire life of a human. Before it degrades in any meaningful way.
Yeah, and even then, it just degrades into small microplastic pieces of the fish eat,
and then gets to us.
Fish and grub.
We all have microplastic. Yep.
That's what's it's insidious because we're all drinking.
But that's just an impactful kind of way of looking at it.
Yep. You know, I don't want to ask for too much of an assignment, but Vern, I think you found a couple of good points already. I think we need a couple of, like, what are, like, the quick, if you were to put together, like, a bullet, like, a series of, like, five or six bullets of here's the main reasons why, you know, we're looking at it.
The plastic and food thing is a big one, and the environment.
Yeah.
Because if people want to protect animals and wildlife and sea life.
Yep.
And a lot of people eat organic food and try to avoid anything chemical.
And yeah, there's plastic and everything.
So here's what I'd like to do, and I think that this could be a committee-wide thing, but I'd ask you guys to respond to this. I'm going to send you an email, and it's going to say, here's the bullets we had in our letter. We didn't have nothing. We have, you know, here are the main issues of plastic bags. I'd like us to think about them. I'd like you guys to either add on to them or have ones that seem like they are the most salient and points that would resonate with your average resident or your average, you know, your business person, your EDC person. People that really need to have the huge take-home points, like a plastic bag will outlive a human being. Like, you know, I think we need to think a little bit more about how we phrase why they're difficult to recycle and what the negative outcomes of their difficulty is.
Well, I would like some sort of plastic monuments myself.
There you go. You're out of
Well, it'll outlive you, David. Now we know that. And so I'd like to use this group to, because you guys probably have a better sense of, like, okay, here's the points that I think would be most helpful, and I want to, part of this is keeping you all, giving you homework in between meetings, because we're all going to have to take part in this.
Exactly.
So that would be helpful. We don't need to, like, turn it into a paragraph. It'd be more like, I'd love to walk away with, like, five bullet points, and what are the five bullet points? What are the five major takeaway conversational points that if you were to drop to somebody, they'd be like, yeah, I get why you're doing it. I get that this is important. And then, Vern, if you wouldn't mind taking on the role of, it seems like you looked at some of the ordinances.
Yeah.
Look at the pieces of the ordinance that seem to be giving options to businesses.
Yes.
And let's think about, we don't need to, you know, we don't need to necessarily have, like, every detail, but we can say generally they offer alternative bagging. They talk about the pricing of the bagging. And then maybe, you know, then, so if you can look at the ordinances, and then beyond that, what probably one next step we could find is talk to a Barrington and, you know, see if there's someone.
Farther down, don't you?
What?
Well, clean water
access
would know what's going on.
Burn.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, you're right. I guess what I wanted to do is I wanted to hear that a business has done, like, we did the, ran the numbers. This is, you know, not a negative budgetary item for us. But if you think Clean Water Access can talk to that as well.
They might be able to. I'll double check.
Yeah. What I want to get is basically that these can be written without having a negative budgetary impact on the business. And that, and like the price that.
I think you need that for EDC.
It'd be nice to. I think all we need at EDC is just to say we know that these ordinances can have. They can be. They're not one set ordinance, and there's options that we can build in that accommodate a business. You know, like the concerns of the business.
One is not enacting it for 6 months.
Yeah, I think that's the other one. Is that we think about. An inaction date that gives plenty of leeway, and it's
to use up their existing stock.
We're not getting into that until we have other people. Like, that's not one of our talking points. I don't think that should be one of our talking points right away.
No,
I think
EDC.
No, to EDC.
Right, right. That's more for the
EDC.
It could or couldn't. I think that the biggest thing is just for them to walk away knowing that there are a range of options.
Right.
And that the range of options that could, you know, could be business friendly.
And that we've been thinking about the impact.
Right.
Yeah. So I think that, Vern, if you don't mind looking that, that would be huge.
The
and
other
then
thing is there are some special, there could be special exceptions for certain types of businesses that have to use plastic bags.
Right.
Or in Jamestown, there was a small business that went out and bought like 5,000 plastic bags just before the thing was passed. Maybe there could be an exception for someone who did that stupidly and give them an extension on the implementation date.
I think, again, it's just making clear to the EDC that there are options that can be implemented.
Right.
It's not just a...
Yeah.
Right.
The that starts
Yeah.
That's
there's a range of options, and that some of the options, you know, could, you know, be more business friendly than others.
Yeah.
And we're interested in finding out what's the fit in South Kingstown.
Because I think if you start selling too hard on one way or another, like, oh, well, we're going to enact, then you could also turn them off. Because we want them to be an active role in engaging the businesses.
There's that. So I think we have some immediate next steps.
Yeah.
Clean water. Narragansett,
Save the Bay,
and you're going to help with like a little bit of like what's the vetting of the range of options.
Right. March 1st.
David's at March 1st.
And I'm also talking to John Rose regarding the Johnston recycling to see if they are in fact recycled.
Okay.
Bags.
Yep.
Yes.
That makes sense. What else is on our little punch list? Did we miss anything?
And when they're in the recycling stream, they can go up the equipment.
And I think maybe by next meeting we can start talking about what would a standard set of questions that we would have if sitting down with a business person. And I think that's something that we can engage the EDC with as well. Yeah, yeah, basically. There's one other piece that I didn't mention, and this is kind of like a side tangent. We'll wait till these guys are...
And they have these inflatable pouches. No, we're talking about recycling.
We're on the agenda items.
Yeah.
Okay.
So there's one other last update I had on this, and that's that Brenda Dillman, who is a middle school teacher at Curtis Corner, those that know her know she also worked as a planner and has worked as a consultant. She reached out to me because she'd really love to have a project for her students built somewhere around the idea of banning plastic shopping bags. And I said, well, our CONCOM is working on this, but you're catching us at a time when we're not really trying to bring this, you know, to a head.
Yeah.
It's like, well, I'd really like to understand what I can do with my students. And I said, we set it up like this. She says, I'd love for them to have a project that can be accomplished within a set time frame. They'd love to present to a group. And I said, well, you know, you could present to the CONCOM, and we would basically love your ideas, but I don't know how much it would be useful. And she's like, maybe they can present to the council. You could present to the council, but they'd probably just say, you know, the CONCOM's working on this for us, so that, you know, it's kind of like deaf ears.
Bad timing.
But the thing that we came up with is that they might come up with like a multimedia piece, some sort of like digital video. And I said, if you're able to create a video that basically says, represents the future generation. Like, this is why we as the future generation care about this issue. This is why we think it's important. It's something that we could hold on to, sort of be a little, another kind of piece of our
outreach
engagement. And then when we come to the time when we're ready for a decision, it could be something that, you know, like a 5-minute video that's like
could
represents.
Yeah,
that'd be great.
So I told them to do that, and they are going to work on that, and they're likely going to give us like the run-through, and there might be other pieces where they want to like kind of engage us on the subject, and that they may be coming to, I think we were talking about the April meeting of this group, and I said our CONCOM would certainly set aside time in our agenda to hear you out and to, you know, we talked about that being the best useful product, and she said she's also, Brenda Dillman, is thinking about her students' experience and like how they, beyond something that's useful for us, is really useful for them. And I said, we're happy to, like, you know, basically bring you into the process in a way that educates them. But what we don't want to do is set them up for something where they learn that government doesn't work fast enough for them.
That's the harsh reality.
Yeah.
Wake up and grow.
So,
that is a good thing. But I know that once they do that, they're going to want to show it. We've spent all this time, so it could be just showing us. They could have a whole parents meeting at Curtis Corner some evening and show it to all the parents.
That's
something we did.
Yeah, and it's not like this is like, let's keep it hid from the council. Mm-hmm. I just think that it could be a nice, let's just say, kind of like emotional push, you know?
Yeah.
And It's like we want to actually
use it later.
Yeah, I literally was like selfishly like, if you want to ask me what's most helpful, it's like to give us a tool that we can then pull out of our toolbox at the time when it's most appropriate.
Crying children, drowning in plastic bags. Oh, it's bad.
Oh, okay. My lord. So just so you know that's in the mix. And like,
I know.
If they want to make a presentation to a live group, I think we should go to a meeting of one of the business associations or, you know, where business people are.
It could be, but like I said, I mean, we're playing it cool on, you know, why are you doing this? And like, well, we're doing it because the town's already working on this. What? Yeah. The town's already working on a plastic bag ban?
I mean, we're getting a plan.
But I don't disagree that's not the audience that should also hear it. I just don't think it's the timing.
Right.
I think that we're keeping things purposely quiet, aside from the businesses that we want to engage with. That way they get the full context of the information. Not, I heard from a friend from a friend from a friend that the town already has a bag ban planned.
Yeah, and aside from the fact that we've recorded everything here for all the town council.
Yeah. Well, by that time, these are eighth graders that are going to be in. She wants to do this semester with eighth graders.
We'll use it for later.
The multimedia.
Yeah, I liked it. I think.
You are the town website.
Yeah, and then I think we're good. I think that.
I'm not feeling great, so.
Okay.
Let's do it.
Update on town WTS inspection reporting software is item number F.
Yeah, so I can give a very quick update on this. VTown has purchased and we are now live with our Carmody program.
Good.
After you loved it for so long and then the last email you're like, I'd like an update because I like something better than Carmody now.
They need two programs. They can go with that, but there's an improvement.
You get one for now.
So we get, we got Carmody.
Three, 4 years behind.
The quick update is that we have Carmody. It's been online since the fall. We're accepting data through Carmody now. The town is again going through a process of issuing townwide mailings to basically ask for inspections. And any person, any business owner that does not respond, does not have their system inspected by a certain point, could be subject to a notice of violation, which can then be kind of translated as a lien on their property. So it basically
keeps me busy. A lot of soil inspections.
So this has been a very effective. It has become a very effective way to make property owners move on these issues. And so this is the second time the town has done this. Basically, I want to say about 7 years.
Seven years.
This is a very effective way that the town has gone about this. There are some properties that still have an NOV, and the town is basically still kind of holding that lien and saying, you know, you can't do anything, you can't leverage any movement on your property until you clear that. And I think I asked John this because I think it was one of your concerns, the temporal versus performance-based inspection issue. And so John's concern is that he doesn't want the inspector to decide the next time an inspection should happen just as a default, because you have inspectors and they've done this and they've actually had to call them out and have like a showcase hearing on why are you telling that person you need to be back in 1 year when that system does not require it. But there's inspectors, without a check on it, there's inspectors that do that, and the town has had to call them out. So John's basically piece is that I want it to be temporal, I want it to be longer than a year that it's required, but an inspector will have the ability to, in the Carmody system, suggest that this particular system does require a check back because of whatever issue it may be, and because of that reason, I'm coming back sooner. And so it's almost like, the rule of thumb isn't that the inspector makes the rule. The rule of thumb is that you need an inspection every so often, and that the inspector has an ability to say, in this circumstance, we need better than that.
But it can also be based on occupancy and size of the system.
Yeah, it could be.
That's typically how the inspector.
But that's at the discretion of the inspector, right?
Yeah, so the inspector could say.
There are guidelines. So if you have like a 3-bedroom house with X occupancy and a certain size tank and a certain type of system, you can estimate how often you'd have to pump it out.
Yeah.
But isn't that what those guidelines that the inspector would go by?
That's yeah. what they should be going by.
Okay.
So the inspectors definitely want to be out as much as possible. That's how they make money.
Oh, yeah.
And the town doesn't want to put them in a position where they determine it based on the default is what the inspector says is when you come back. They want to make it, you come back at least within this many years.
Typically it's 3 to 5 years.
Yeah. Yeah, and so that's John's thought is, yeah, it should be that. But if someone wants to come back, you know, below a certain threshold, then they can just provide a justification in their inspection to Carmody.
Right.
And then that is basically them giving us the just cause for it, as opposed to the town having to call them out and like monitor and like, why are you coming to this property every year? You don't have to. And then, you know, like having like the what happens is the inspecting companies say it's just our policy. It's like, no, that is not sufficient. Like your policy is not sufficient.
Our policy is to make money.
Yeah.
And the homeowner doesn't so, away for 3 years.
That. So that's my update on that.
Okay.
Any questions?
So about the new system that's available, Barnstable County tracks actual effluent monitoring data. So in Barnstable County, they've been tracking the performance of all the advanced treatment systems, and that data gets reported directly to the county. The county handles it for various towns within that area.
How does that get monitored?
They take a sample, the wastewater inspector, person who maintains the system takes a sample and brings it to a lab.
They're taking
actual effluent samples.
Okay.
From the tank?
Coming out of the treatment system after it's been treated to show that it's meeting the.
But we have a traditional system.
Oh, you wouldn't be.
Yeah, you're not testing.
Okay.
It's for advanced systems.
Yes, okay. That's just for IA systems. So they would test the effluent and report it directly to this new database. It's actually not new. They've been using it for a long time. But they recently had a meeting at URI with wastewater managers. The South Kingstowns may have been there. And they're making it available for free to any community that wants it. It's just that it would have to be customized for Rhode Island. The other thing is Carmody, I thought this one might replace Carmody, but Carmody is designed for the routine maintenance.
Yeah.
In the reminders and all of that, or in the notices if it's failed.
Yep.
This one is just to track the performance.
Performance
so
of the
this is ideal
IA systems.
New INA systems, especially in critical areas, where if we had this customized, we could require it. We could require it anyway, but this way it's a way to keep track of the results.
Do you know, is there a cost associated with this software?
No, the software is free, but the cost would be involved in customizing it for South Kingstown. But Hallstown is interested.
And your average wastewater inspector can do this type of testing?
No, the maintenance provider.
I was going to say,
to ensure that the IA systems are working.
Yeah,
oh, but it's not your average inspector. It's a different
maintenance provider that you hire to take care of your
who's required as part of your contract for your system.
Right.
Okay. So it's basically a way for the town to gather information on a required test that
to make sure that the system is performing
as
it's supposed to.
Do you have a sense on the cost of this? Like what?
The monitoring.
Yeah. What an average? Like after you do the test, you know, like.
It's not that much.
Yeah.
I can get it.
Yeah.
But basically,
that's going to be the question that I will be faced with.
In the areas where people are building now, like coastal areas, coastal areas, it wouldn't be a lot for those people.
It'd be probably part of their maintenance plan.
It is part of the maintenance
plan. No, but I mean like work the price into their maintenance plan.
Yeah, because the maintenance provider collects the samples and reports it.
And they're just right now reporting it to.
They don't report it to anybody.
They just have to collect it and probably.
Nobody collects that data.
I thought some of the installers.
The large flow.
So they have to test, and they're testing basically because if the tests are beyond a certain threshold, then they know there's a problem.
The town, the data can receive the town and see if those systems are actually working.
Yeah.
Which we don't know. Right now, DEM requires monitoring of large flow systems.
Yeah.
And even then, it might only be a few years during the operation.
Yeah.
During the initial first few years.
You mean large flow by the, like?
Large, like 50,000 gallons.
Yeah, yeah.
10,000 gallons. And they don't have even a good system of keeping track of those large systems.
So my one question is, so the average resident that, you know, let's say we enlist this system, the the average resident saying, okay, I don't know, you know, when the, my next time my maintenance provider is coming out to perform that, but so they're already coming out, they're already performing these tests. It's just a matter of having a system. They're not testing.
They're performing maintenance.
They're performing maintenance, and they may be looking at pH and TSS and other things that they need to know in order to properly to maintain the system.
Yep.
But they're generally not testing for nitrogen.
Okay, so they're not testing the effluent and the and basically the concern of is the system actually effective?
So we don't know whether that system's even working. And there's only there are some concerns that there aren't enough maintenance providers to do a good job, and. So there's some evidence that they're not doing the greatest job. The other thing is, at URI, New England On-Site Training Center, Georgia, Lewis, and others, have a project where they have been going out and actually monitoring systems to see how they're working. And they're finding that, on average, most of them are working, they're meeting the 19 milligram per liter standard, but not always. And the systems that are monitoring are doing better than the systems that are not monitored on a regular basis.
Does that mean they're not being maintained properly
no,
by the
maintenance people? No, they have someone going out to maintain them.
What's failing?
They're not doing a good enough job.
Yeah, like the technology or the system itself is not.
They're not also adjusting the system to perform better based on the parameters that they consider when they go out there.
So my question is does... How is Barnstable able to force the inspectors to do more work than they maybe initially signed up for in a contract?
Because the homeowner is required to do it. It's a homeowner required.
Oh, okay, so you basically, the town would require the homeowners to have this, and then the homeowner would have to potentially negotiate additional
work.
Barnstable County has been doing this for a number of years, and so it would be as if South Kingstown was just starting their wastewater management program, and you required maintenance of a system. Okay. At the same time, you'd require monitoring twice a year and that data being reported to Barnstable County.
So it's basically, it's a slow start that you have to do it for new systems. You have to start requiring for any new system installed that they also provide testing along with their maintenance contract.
Which would be an added cost to the home.
Yeah. Okay, I understand
but
it. So
it could be something that could phase into existing systems in critical areas. I don't see that it would be something that would be townwide.
Yeah. I mean, I think the only concerns would be, you know, what is the cost burden that would, you know, result from that decision? What's the average maintenance provider going to respond to when the homeowner says, you need to do this extra work? And is there... You know, there probably is a range of different costs that they would offer.
The other way
wouldn't it be that the maintenance provider would say, okay, well, that will be an extra charge?
So the homeowner would take on the cost burden. So we need to understand what that is and then also understand if it's pretty, you know, equivalent across the border.
It's $200 a year, I think.
Yeah. So, I mean, but that's not nothing. I mean, that's something that...
That would be a hardship for some people.
Yeah, so that, and that's something that...
It's going to be coastal properties, riverfront, that sort of thing.
Yeah. So,
right.
I mean, it's...
something to think about.
Yeah.
It shows promise. And they've also been, at URI, they've been testing out kits rather than sending the samples to the lab.
Oh.
So that might keep the cost down, although they're still evaluating that. But they're going to be coming out with recommendations within the next year or so for wastewater management programs and explaining their results, and they'll have recommendations.
So I think that, you know, I can help bring some of this information back, but it's probably we need to digest it a little bit more, and
it's preliminary.
Yeah.
But the other thing is, it would be much easier to adapt the Barnstable County program for Rhode Island if the communities with wastewater management programs got together and did it collectively rather than each group redoing it on their own.
Yeah.
So Jamestown, Charlestown, I don't know if Block Island is interested. There wasn't anyone there. North Kingstown wasn't interested. Portsmouth is interested. There are several other towns there.
So okay. Is there, in Rhode Island, who's leading the conversation on this? You were right.
Well, yeah, George and Jose Amador, the other professor involved, organized the workshop. And they're going to report back to the group and kind of promote, you know, push them a little bit.
Gotcha.
So I'll keep everyone informed.
Yeah, in the end, it's just going to, it would be a John Schock that needs to basically agree to, yeah, let's do this as part of our wastewater management plan. And so he's going to want to know what burden is he putting on the community through this.
The burden would be just for the few new homes being installed in critical areas, but that's a policy decision.
And that I don't see as a huge burden. No. You know, like the new ones coming online, it's like, right. Hey, you know, like that's obviously it's very small steps, right. But it's something that it's not something they didn't sign up for.
Right. And they're basically often if they need a special use permit, you know, this isn't just another condition.
Mm-hmm.
The burden on the town would be in addition to managing the routine inspections and repairs. They'd also have to review the data, the monitoring data.
Yeah, and I guess we'd need to think about, okay, at what threshold does this data indicate that we need to issue an NOV for a non-functioning system that the inspector says is not substandard, but the testing indicates is?
Right. Well, the inspector, the sampling data is actual data,
yeah.
Whereas the inspector is just looking at the condition of the tank.
But I mean, generally, the town's position has been like, the inspector says the system's operational. Like, you know, basically, how do we measure one person's data set against another? But I don't disagree with it. I just think that those are the issues that need to be worked out for someone like a John Schock to say, yeah, let's go ahead and investigate the town.
Yeah.
Taking on this type of role.
There wouldn't be conflicting data because the data isn't being collected now. The other issue is it's not being used to bring enforcement action. The data is being used to work with the wastewater system maintainer, the maintenance staff, and help them figure out what's going on with the system to bring it up to level.
So like the sample guy is basically part of their maintenance staff, but the information is generally given back to the company to say there's a problem, your system isn't performing, you need to figure out why.
Right.
And
it goes back, well, once the town sees it, the town would then contact the maintenance provider and say, hey, what is going on with the system? And typically in Barnstable County, they get the data, and when they see a system is repeatedly high, they'll contact the town and let them know, and then they'll also work with the maintenance provider to figure out what's going on.
Yeah, it seems like the biggest change is that there's a watchdog involved, and then that basically tries to keep the inspectors, not the maintenance, honest, because they know that not only are they testing, but the testing is evaluated.
Right.
Yeah.
No, and I don't disagree with it. I just think that, we need to think about it a little bit more. And I know how, you know, it's not going to be an easy sell to John to say the town should take on a new thing.
No, and I don't think we're ready to do that. I think we need to see where the other towns go with it and how it works.
The CAP approach sounds promising because then the adjustments and corrections could be done in the one visit for the maintenance person.
Well,
correct,
not really, because the kids work better when you take them indoors. Because with variable light and other factors, they're more reliable inside.
That's too bad.
But it is more instant. It is quicker.
Because then they've got to come back to deal with that, so there's additional expense associated with the return to correct, obviously.
Right.
It needs to be done.
Some things they can adjust remotely, like pump cycles and things like that.
Next is Land and Water Summit. Who would like to go and use ConCom funds to go there? David? Anybody else? Those people that aren't here tonight are going to be really sorry about it.
Well, we did discuss this in January, and I didn't see it reflected in the minutes. We discussed it?
I don't recall discussing
it. No, it was like December.
We didn't meet in December.
But it was earlier.
No, we met in December. It was late. No, maybe did we skip December entirely?
We did. But it has come up before, and I thought we did raise your
hand. I thought Ann had interest and Mary had interest.
But Mary would go by
the
state. Yeah.
I thought Ann had interest in going.
Did Ann have interest in going? All right.
Well, contact her and find out.
All right. Then they got lucky because you brought that up. I was going to say, if you didn't come to the meeting, we did have a meeting in December.
Well, here's another.
December 6th.
Okay.
They can get the money.
Well, in fact, we didn't agree.
We just probably didn't fit under, probably talked about it very quickly and it didn't fit under one of our agenda items. All right, I'm going to email the entire committee and we will.
What's the deadline for submitting for doing this?
February 23rd is when the price goes up.
Okay.
So I'm seeing that it is. My printout didn't come out very well, but I'm seeing before February 23rd is some price.
March 6th. Is
the
10th.
Okay.
March 10th is the event.
Okay.
So I'm going to, in my email, tell you what the deadline is, and it's going to be so that Ginny can get things with some buffer time before February 23rd.
Okay.
So it's within the next few weeks, and yeah, we'll set it up. But David, you're the one here at this meeting that is.
What is a beauty?
That was a weird hiccup.
David, you're the one here that you're interested.
Yeah.
Can I get a motion from the group that all interested parties in going can utilize the commission funds to go?
Motion.
So moved.
Second. Discussion. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Jen, you moved?
Yeah.
I have to write these things down.
That was the hit.
Oh, no, I did.
Lorraine moved. And then Jen seconded, and okay.
We all
agreed.
Okay, quickly, the added agenda item is I heard from Maria Mack that our representative, Carol McEntee, was introducing this week a bill to ban single-use plastic bags. And it had been in the legislature before. I was hoping I'd have some information because it was requested that we send a letter of support, A, to the town council, B, to, I don't know, the legislature, I guess. Doug explained the protocol is that once the bill is introduced, the sponsor, Carol McEntee, would request of the town council a letter of approval and that the town council would request from us an advisory opinion. So we need more information, and we'll have that by next meeting. And,
yeah.
But I just want to give you a heads up that, you know, I know these things take forever, and our process is going to take forever, but it's very interesting. It definitely could be a talking point to our interviewees, that, well, you know, this bill is now pending before the state, and we're confronting this in all sorts of ways. And I don't know what provisions they were making. I don't know any details about it, but I just wanted to give everybody a heads up on that.
I guess the issue would be, is it any different from previous years, and is it going to work this year?
Yeah, I don't know. It probably depends on how she's going to work the room, you know, how popular, how many coalitions she can build. Doug, any correspondence, or was that it?
No correspondence.
Okay, does anybody have anything else to bring up last minute? Okay, meeting is adjourned at 7:39.
That's not bad.
I get to know the first appointment, plus or minus. Yes.
Thank you all. Yeah.